Welcome to the Gamesmith's Table Talk. This is a roundtable format discussion where I and my guests try to cover three tabletop role-playing related topics in 15 minutes. If you know anything about tabletop role players, then you'll know that this is an ambitious goal. Let's head to the table. Welcome back to our Table Talk podcast. I'm your host, Clayton the Gamesmith, and joining me are...
I'm Franklin.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Clark.
Let's head to the table.
The views and opinions of the panel are their own and do not reflect the views and opinions of any other individual company or organization. This podcast has been known to be opinionated. You have been warned.
In this episode of Table Talk, we're going to continue our discussion on metagaming, but we're going to shift our attention to a different type of metagaming. This is player skill, education, and experience versus the skill, experience, and education of their characters. How they merge together, how they cross, how they influence one another, and can it interfere with gameplay at the table? Thoughts?
I think there is always going to be a certain level of metagaming regardless, because obviously you're playing your character, not the other way around. But as long as you're bringing something that could realistically happen in-universe, like in-game, I don't really consider it metagaming. You had mentioned before the example with the farmer. How would a farmer have advanced engineering knowledge or arcana knowledge or such? Something like that's pretty obvious, but when you're trying to work out a puzzle or solutions for your character in a creative way, a certain amount of metagaming, I think, should be allowed for certain.
We spent a lot of the last episode talking about sort of the dark side of metagaming, where it absolutely does detract from the overall gaming experience. And that's sort of why I brought the conversation into this vein, because I think there are circumstances where metagaming can be beneficial. Something I've always been really consistently impressed by is the creative solutions that my players have come up with based on real-world information, real-world knowledge and skills that they have. To give a more concrete example, we had an encounter with a swarm of bees, with a party of fresh, new first-level characters. I had intended that they were going to just run away from this encounter because they really didn't have the tools available to fight a swarm of bees. Anyone who's familiar with how swarms work in Pathfinder would know that they can be very, very dangerous if you don't have the right tools. And so I expected, like I said, the players were going to just run away. Turns out, and I learned this at this exact moment, one of my players used to be a beekeeper and happened to know that smoke has a calming effect on bees. And so with creative use of a couple of smoke sticks, they actually were able to calm and disperse the swarm. And I'd say this is an example of when a player is able to use their out-of-game knowledge to find creative and unusual solutions to problems. And as long as there's a reasonable method that their character would know that information, it really can add a lot to the game. It's a safe bet that everyone at the table is going to have some skill that no one else at the table has.
For sure.
Based on just differences in career or hobbies or something. And if you can find a way to make use of that skill in-game, again, within the bounds of what would be reasonable for your character to know, it can really add a lot to the experience.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that's not only... That example itself is not only allowable, but probably, you know, rewardable as well, because they're bringing something to the table, right?
I'd say even beyond adding something to the game experience, it's a situation where role-playing games can add to your wealth of knowledge as a person. I have met lots of people who are generally impressed with how much I know about how, you know, life in medieval Europe works, knowledge of things in history, engineering, warfare, physics, sciences. And a lot of these things I've picked up because I played a character who knew about this, and so I spent some time actually learning and researching how this actually works. You're going to play a character who is a siege engineer. Do some actual reading about how medieval siege weapons worked. Or vice versa, if you already have some knowledge about medieval siege engines, maybe consider creating a character that has access to that knowledge because of their background.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, unfortunately, there is a dark side to that. And it usually comes in when you have conflict between the GM and the player. And that conflict usually comes in the form of the player knows more about this particular skill or knowledge than the GM does. And the GM has a very specific idea how that knowledge is going to work at his table. The Siege Engine one, for instance. You know, somebody who actually knows about Siege Engines might know, you know, about elevations and making sure that your...
materials, counterweights, so on and so forth.
Exactly. And that your catapult, for instance, is actually locked down before you throw that catapult up, or else you're going to, you know, cause a lot of problems. And that sort of thing. But if the administrator's like, or no, my catapults don't work like that here. So that can be a downside on that. And it can also be a downside if, for instance, the bee, I've played with several administrators that would tell you, no, that doesn't work. That smoke thing doesn't work with these bees. Because in the rules, it says this for swarms. And doesn't say anything about smoke. And they won't reward it. So then you get frustration from the player's point. And there's so many things that we've talked about. That comes down to communication at your table.
Yeah.
What I feel a good hallmark for a DM to know that you've got a good one is one who's flexible in what happens at his table. And is, as like Franklin, rewarded his player for knowing about the smoke. The other characters now will know that and apply it next time they run into a swarm of bees.
Right.
Or they'll try to apply it to a swarm of sturges and find out it doesn't work.
I think a big part of it, too, is being flexible enough to not let the small details or semantics interfere with the flow of the game or interfere with the fun at the table.
Now, if you've got a person who is building an electrical generator in medieval times...
that's a problem.
Everyone's just going to be like, really, dude? Or they might jump on and go, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, I actually have some personal experience on that. Being an electrician myself and playing D&D with my college buddies who were, you know, when you have three electricians sitting around the table, someone's going to build a generator eventually. And yeah, it's sort of, in that circumstance, it kind of just comes down to the game that you're playing. In that circumstance, it was a much lower stakes adventure, sort of a sillier theme. As a GM, yeah, maybe you let the players get away with something like that. Especially, and I would say especially, if one of the characters is a high intelligence character, like a wizard who has ranks in engineering... maybe they do actually know how electromagnetism works and could start to build some simple devices. Keeping in mind as well, there's a massive difference, especially, and this is a nice tip for GMs, if you have a player that's really trying to go down this road, there's a huge difference between knowing how to build something and having the physical capability to build something. Most of the modern devices that we use, things like switches, plugs, relays, generators, transformers, are pretty simple in how they operate, but require massive industrial infrastructure to actually build them. And so a player might be a PC who has some knowledge of smithing, might be able to make a very basic switch, but building a computer is going to be completely beyond them, even if they understand the base concept of how it works.
We also run into the problem, and it's unfortunate that this is a negative, where you run into players who are simply in a position to demand that my player would know that, my character would know this. It's like, so you were raised on a farm, you have basic reading levels, you have a basic addition and subtraction, you have no idea of what algebra is or division or anything else like that, and yet you're making proclamations about, my character would absolutely have this knowledge, and you're being unfair because everybody knows this. How would we approach that when you have a player at the table who is... absolutely determined to metagame something, but they don't see it as metagaming. They see it as common knowledge for everybody of the day.
I think in that circumstance, being aware of the historical context of the real world areas that your world is based on, and also having some idea about the fictional world that you're playing in, might help check some of those assumptions. A really common assumption in the modern day is that everyone can read and write. A lot of role-playing games will back this up, where if you're a PC, it's assumed you can read and write in your native tongue. That was certainly not the case through most of history.
Yes.
If you were actually a medieval peasant, you probably could speak a language. There was almost no chance that you could read or write in that language. You probably couldn't do anything more than very, very basic addition and subtraction beyond, you know, counting on your fingers.
Unless you were a merchant.
If you were in a merchant class or a noble class, now it becomes much more common. You probably can read and write. You probably know
basic math skills.
No, yeah. I mean, granted, most fantasy role-playing games, just make the assumption that if, in the rule, that if you can speak a language, you read and write the language, because it's simpler.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I played a character who didn't know how to read.
And it created a number of problems throughout the campaign.
And had a great deal of fun as well.
Yes, it was tremendously fun, but it was a continuous challenge that we had to work past.
Yes, especially since the other three characters were all well-educated people.
They were all university-educated.
Yeah.
You know.
Spellcasters.
Polylingual spellcasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The incredible, the look of just shock when our mage found out that the farmer didn't know how to read was amazing. It was hilarious. You can't read?
I think that runs into the problem that most assume that if you can speak the language that you're completely fluent yeah. in it, and you're reading and you're writing and deciphering things, and that's...
Well, as a professor of English, I can tell you that some not. People who think they can speak English can't.
For that, where the character is being belligerent, is once again, I think it comes down to communication. You can do it in one of two ways as a GM. Capitulate, or just, you know, stop the game and say, okay, look, this is just the way this game world is going to work. This will not be going on with this. You can refer back to the GM's always right rule. I mean, they're the ones that put together the world. But if a character is that belligerent, it's probably going to stop your game. Unless the rest of the players get on board and say, let's just move past this for now and revisit it later. Or let's just stop play altogether and
resolve yeah. it.
Resolve it now.
Yeah. I think we are kind of drifting into a different topic
yes.
there. We made reference in the last episode to a probable future episode about resolving disputes between GMs and players. And this is kind of the territory we're getting into. You have this kind of dispute. The important thing, I would say the method that you resolve it is almost more important than the actual result that you come to.
Yes.
Because how exactly you handle these sorts of situations will have a profound impact on, in some cases, the continued existence of your gaming group.
Yeah.
If you handle things poorly.
I've quit tables for less.
Yeah.
But <cowards. laughs> for metagaming, the other problem with having real world knowledge is if you get somebody who's a really good speaker, they can run the game as a player over the GM because it's obvious they know way more than the GM about a subject. Where I find this happening a lot is survival situations where a person at the table knows a lot about surviving in a certain environment. And so every time the GM opens their mouth, they're like, no, it's this, right? No, you don't do that. That's a myth. And it can, depending on how it's approached, be a positive, or it could definitely be a negative. Because, you know, as the GM, you start feeling inadequate. And it's like, okay, what, do you want to run this section? That sort of thing. So,
well, it's just one of those things where you have to accept that there are people who have more knowledge about certain things
yeah.
than you do. And that's just the way it is.
There are circumstances where you're able to turn that in. There are circumstances where you are able sometimes to turn that into a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can use that person's wealth of knowledge and information as a resource to make the experience better. Not necessarily saying, all right, hand over the reins and you run this part, but say maybe something along the lines of, all right, well, in between, you know, let's get through the session that we're in. In between sessions, let's have a chat, either in person or Facebook, whatever, and let's give me a rundown on how this actually works. You know, if you're saying the way I've set up this city doesn't work based on the way that cities were built in ancient times, well, let's talk about this. Let's redraw the map and make this accurate. And especially if you can give the player then some little boon because of that. If you use, for example, the hero point system from Advanced Player's Guide in Pathfinder, giving them a hero point or two for something like that can go a long way to sort of diffusing the situation.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, as a GM, it's really important to just kind of, as a general rule, not just with metagaming, but to be able to roll with the proverbial punches and know that you're never going to be right 100% of the time, and neither are your players. And the whole point is to enjoy the experience. And if you're getting bogged down into whether I have this engineering knowledge or not, that's what the dice are for.
Yeah.
Make a dice roll, problem solved, you move on.
Yeah,
rather
absolutely.
Than explaining and going over it and redrawing and retooling and recrafting and having a survival discussion, rather than going into the minutiae of how to hunt rabbits with a bow and arrow, how about you just make a survival check and you're done?
How to actually start a fire.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think as well, throwing back to the previous episode, we have, like we talked about there, how much, take a minute and consider how much is this particular discussion, is it adding to or is it subtracting from your enjoyment of the game?
Exactly.
You
yep.
can definitely play fast and loose with physics if that's not something you're terribly interested in. If you are someone who really enjoys studying history and researching things, yeah, using your experience in the game as an avenue to discover things about topics that you've never imagined can be very interesting and engaging. As a GM, when I'm prepping an area, I usually will do quite a bit of reading about, and say, so the people in this area are based on the Mongols. Well, let's go and read everything I can about Mongolian culture and history, and, you know, what are the naming conventions like? What is the average education level of the people that are around? What are stigmas, superstitions that are relevant to the area? So that you do actually know, you have some framework to go off of.
Yeah, and in an ideal world, I completely agree with that. Unfortunately, people don't have enough time, their schedules are cramped, don't have access to the resources that they need in a timely manner. Any number of things that can really cramp that. By the time you come up with the idea for something, you've got 3 hours before the campaign starts, and you've got kids to feed and library books to return and so on and so forth, and there just isn't time. That's okay, too. That's what the dice are for.
Anything else on this, Clark? All right, so I think we've all come to the conclusion that with metagaming, it's both a positive and a negative. It's almost essential when you start character creating. How much or how little you allow at your table is up to your table. There's no good or bad level.
Well, I think the bad level,
ways that metagaming can detract from your game. But if done correctly, they can add quite a bit as well.
Yeah. And a certain amount's unavoidable and even needed, really.
Yes, because you are playing outside that environment in a collapsed time frame, and so it just helps to be able to go, I'm going to make this check or I'm going to do this, which is totally metagaming it, and we'll make an assumption about getting things done. We've gone over our traditional time frame, so until next time.
We'll see you at the table.